With that gavel, I have convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for March the 16th, 2015, for the purpose of public hearing on Senate Bill 5525, the Oregon Business Development Department. And before we start, I'd like it noted for the record that Representative Whitsitt is excused and Senator Hansel are excused. And then, by way of a courtesy, we are joined by guests today that are here with the World Affairs Council. They are from Serbia, and I would very much appreciate it if I could embarrass you by asking you to introduce yourselves and say what you do in Serbia, and they'll be observing our committee this afternoon. So if I may ask you to introduce yourselves.
I'm working in the Serbian National Assembly as the Secretary of the European Integration Committee, and we came here to see how the United States federal government and state governments are working, and the relations between federal government and state governments can compare for what we can do.
Thank you so much.
I'm Gavina Aladic. I work for the government. Specifically, I work for the Public Policy Secretariat, which is in charge of gathering priorities for the government and making one official document called the Action Plan for Implementation of Government Program. We developed that action plan together with line ministries, and now we are going to report to the Prime Minister about implementation of these priorities.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Milana Štefanić. I work as a researcher in the Library of the National Assembly, and we keep our members of Parliament informed and smart.
Thank you. Thank you. And World Affairs, would you introduce yourselves to, please?
My name is Lauren Potter. I'm a program officer at the World Affairs Council of Oregon, and each year we bring about 500 international visitors to Oregon through the U.S. State Department sponsored programs. So it's an honor to be here today. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. And your State Department colleague, please.
I'm Nick Kozuska, interpreter, translator, and liaison working with the State Department.
Thank you very much. And on behalf of the committee, Dobrodošli u Oregon. Did I do okay? We're honored to have you here. Thank you very much. So with that, we are going to begin the hearing. Mr. Bender, would you please introduce the agency, and then we'll begin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and subcommittee members. Today, you're starting the first of 4 days of public hearings on the budget of the Oregon Business Development Department contained in Senate Bill 5525. The Oregon Business Development Department provides economic and community development and cultural enhancement programs throughout the state. They also administer programs that aid businesses and communities, and they administer the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program, a new program that you transfer to them this biennium. The agency has an extensive presentation for you. They are actually a fairly complicated agency. They have a large number of programs. They have a large number of funding sources. They do, among the committees that this subcommittee reviews, have the largest amount of general fund lottery funds that are not dedicated specifically to debt service. So there's always a lot of interest on the part of the full committee co-chairs in the decisions that you make on this agency budget. Just in very brief context, the governor's recommended budget includes $61.3 million in general fund and lottery fund enhancements above current service level. The co-chair's budget framework includes $24 million of enhancements above current service level. These are significant amounts of enhancements in both budgets. Please note that the department has a number of ongoing programs that are funded on a one-time basis. So the fact that there are $24 million in the co-chair's budget above the CSL does not imply necessarily $4 million of new programs that the department doesn't operate currently. It primarily would be used to continue programs that were funded this biennium on a one-time basis. But if there aren't any questions, the department is ready to come forward. Otherwise, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, colleagues, of Mr. Bender? Okay, there being none, we'd invite Director Robbins to come forward, and in the interest of full transparency, Representative Reed and I both serve ex officio by appointment of our presiding officers on the commissions.
And Oregon Inc.
Thank you very much. I would have missed that. So both of us have a relationship with the agency, proudly. Mr. Robbins, welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Sean Robbins, the Director of Business Oregon. Thank you for having us here for the next 4 days of testimony and hearings on our agency budget. Since I was appointed last June, I've heard time and again, can't wait for the Ways and Means budget hearings, can't wait for the Ways and Means budget hearings. So I'm really glad to finally be here on March 16th for our Ways and Means budget hearings. So I look forward to spending the rest of the week with you and starting to work with you on crafting what will be our final budget for the 2015 to 2017 biennium budget. Over the next 4 days, I'm going to be sitting right here in this chair every day. And over time, colleagues of mine from the various departments will come up and will present more detailed information on the various programs and investments that we make as an agency. Today, I'm going to spend about a half hour or so of time giving a broader, more high-level agency overview. I think in full transparency, important that you have a clear understanding of who we are, what we do, what our approach to economic development is, before we get into more granular specifics in the coming days, even as early as later this afternoon as we start the business development piece of this. And by Thursday, actually, if we've done our job right, then you should have a comprehensive and solid understanding of what our priorities are, how we make those investments in economic development, and how we do our business. You'll hear from some of the folks here over the next couple days, the assistant directors of this agency, including Amanda Beidel, our chief financial officer, Samantha Julian, our new assistant director of business development, Lynn Schessler from the Infrastructure Finance Authority, Evo Trummer on innovation and entrepreneurship, Brian Rogers from the Oregon Arts Commission, and Tim Williams from Oregon Film. And just as a note, sometimes we have to remind folks both Oregon Arts, Film, and Cultural Trust are also inside of our agency as well. So with that, I'd like to begin. As some of you already know, my tenure began as the director of the agency June 1st of this past year. And for the last 9 months, my team and I have been working very diligently to try to align the programs of the agency and the investments that we make with some of the new realities that we're finding coming out in the post-recession economy. Our core mission, of course, helping Oregon companies grow and helping communities compete in the global economy, doesn't change and hasn't changed. But some of the ways in which we're going about attacking that mission statement are evolving to reflect reality on the ground. Just like any good business, which is what we try to do, is to act like the customers that we have, which is business, we are shaping and evolving our strategy as conditions on the ground change. A couple of context-setting thoughts before we get any further, which is on the opportunities and challenges of where our agency finds ourselves and the state of Oregon finds itself in terms of the economic climate. And there's lots of literature and far better folks who can testify at length about more detailed specifics. But here's a couple things in each of the challenges and weaknesses or strengths areas that I want to highlight. The first, and this directly affects the work that we do in the budget we're about to present to you, is that Oregon is still a place that makes things. It's a component of durable manufacturing as a total piece of state GDP is significant, approximately 30%, making us one of the most manufacturing-dependent states in the country. This is a good thing. This is a good thing because lots of those manufacturing jobs provide middle-skill, middle-wage jobs for lots of Oregonians. Second, we are proximate to one of the largest growing consumer segment anywhere in the world on the Pacific Rim. I mean, we're extremely well positioned as an export economy because of that, and combined with our manufacturing intensity, we have an opportunity not only to make, but to ship those products around the world. And the third,
Mr. Evans, before you leave number two, could you please comment on the impact of the loss of Hanjin and the effect on our economy, the jobs, the Terminal 6, if you've got any high-level comments about that?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Hanjin's, two things sort of to point out here on Hanjin. One, Hanjin, the company, is still servicing the market. It's not calling a ship to the port of Portland at this time. It's a major loss for the port. But many of the small and medium-sized businesses do continue to be serviced by the freight forwarding community and the shipping industry, albeit, of course, they're having to find alternative locations, incur additional costs for that shipping to new markets like Seattle, Tacoma, for example. So it adds time and it increases costs to those small and medium-sized businesses. The larger traded sector industries in the state have exceptional capacity to endure these types of ebbs and flows. What worries me most is the small and medium-sized enterprises who aren't able to ebb and flow as rapidly as some of the larger traded sector companies in the state.
Thank you very much. Please continue.
So building on the fact that we make things and we export things in this state, the last piece there is that we have an exceptional ability to attract qualified talent from all over the world. Now, if you add these three things up, most states, and I've said this many times, most states would kill to have this set of competitive advantages. You make things, you have access to one of the fastest growing markets in the world, and you're able to attract top talent. So those are good things, but they on their own aren't going to be enough to move us forward, especially when we look at some of the challenges that we have and we face as a state, which is highlighted on the next slide. Most of these I don't need to tell you, so I won't spend a lot of time on them, but some things that shape our thinking worth passing along. First, comparatively speaking, we have lower household incomes, both to our neighbors to the north, also on a national basis as well. That, on the one hand, means we have a bit of a competitive advantage in labor costs as it compares to California and Washington, but at the same time, it also translates into lower tax revenue as a result. Second, and this is something we found this summer as we traveled the state, which I'll get into in more depth in the next few minutes, we have key gaps in our workforce preparedness, both technical skills and soft skills. And if you talk to a CEO when they're making a site selection decision, whether it's an in-state expansion or it's an out-of-state recruitment, oftentimes the first and last question that that CEO or decision maker will ask is entirely about workforce, the quality of that workforce and the depth of that workforce, and if they have a state partner who will deliver on that with them. The last piece is the unevenness of the economic recovery. Again, certainly something we saw this past summer. The divide between what we're seeing as a recovery that has occurred for the last few years and continues to occur in urban segments of the state and other parts of the state, mostly rural in nature, continue to struggle. And what we hear, what that really means is that while urban Oregon does well, the rest of the state in some places hasn't been able to catch up or keep up with the rate of growth. So we have in many ways a dumbbell effect on terms of recovery.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I chair the education sub of Ways and Means, and we've been looking into the dropout situation and have concluded considerable testimony that not all states count the dropouts the same way. And in fact, Oregon is disadvantaged by being a little tighter in the way we count our dropout rate. So those numbers are being recalculated, recalibrated, and we may not be the second worst. We may be only the 10th worst. Thank you.
That sort of feels like retouching one's own x-rays.
Oh, no.
Please
oh,
continue,
no.
Mr. Robbins.
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, education is incredibly important to our ability to compete on economic development, so thank you for that comment. One challenge that stood out to me above these three, though, more than any was, and it really relates to that third point about the disparity, is our collective sense of urgency for economic development and job growth. and making sure, and I hope what our agency has done in the last 9 months and continues to do going forward this budget, is not take our foot off the pedal. Just because the recovery technically is in swing doesn't mean that the prioritization of job growth and economic development should go away. And that's one thing that could potentially get in our way in delivering on our expectations if we don't keep that pedal on.
Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, Mr. Robbins. You know, we're talking about Portland and Bend as attracting talent, and I think the point needs to be made about some of the places they're attracting talent from. Some of those places are out of state, but all too often they're attracting that talent from are the rural parts of Oregon that the co-chair referred to a few moments ago. I think one of our greatest exports from rural Oregon is our youth and our talent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gomberg, we heard that as well consistently on the road this summer, is that most smaller rural communities, when you ask them what frustrates them the most, it's actually watching their youth leave the community and not having an economic competitiveness plan in place in order to keep that youth there and give them a viable future forward.
Mr. Robbins, Director Robbins, something you and I have talked about previously, and I completely agree with the notion that the agency wants to embed a sense of urgency. I keep struggling to reconcile that with a regulatory and land use framework that sometimes makes it more difficult. We have a situation in my district right now where we have are trying to expand the urban growth boundary, have been to DLCD three times, have been to a vote of the people, all affirmative, and we are being dragged into the Court of Appeals by someone who doesn't even live in the county. We're now 2 years and counting on an economic development opportunity, and I'm not expecting you to answer this right now, but I would hope that the agency would continue to give thought to reconciling what for me is an inherent contradiction. We have the state agency saying it's urgent that we go forward, and we seem to be facing lawsuits and regulatory hurdles at every turn. And I'm certainly not making a case to say it ought to be the Wild West and you go out and build whatever you want, wherever you want. But any agency suggestions that helps keep us focused and with a reasonable expectation of success for citing different companies that are looking at our state to make significant private sector investments that would pay the kind of taxes to support the kinds of services that we all say that we're interested in seeing here. Again, you don't have to answer, but that's something just that I think is important to have on the record.
Madam Chair, in fact, and I've made this comment before in other settings, which is that our job is as a non-regulatory agency. We're really promotional in nature for the state of Oregon on behalf of Oregonians, but we can only be so effective at accomplishing our mission if the product itself doesn't sell. And so the more difficult we make it, the harder it is sometimes to accomplish that mission. And I, like you, would hate to see a scenario where it's the Wild West. But when you ask CEOs, you ask management decision makers inside companies who are looking to grow jobs somewhere, whether it's here or somewhere else, typically the answer on regulatory and tax framework issues are, I want clarity and predictability. We don't have to be the lowest common denominator. We probably don't want to be the highest common denominator. But what they value is predictability and clarity of the system that they're given so they know what the rules of the road are.
Thank you. Please continue.
So by now, most of you have heard that I spent most of the summer with the executive team after I came on board conducting 11 town halls across the state. Instead of coming in with all the answers, what we said was, let's ask everyone on the ground what they need from this agency. What is it that we do well? What is it that we're not delivering well on? What should we be delivering that we're not delivering at all? So we organized 11 town halls across the state. We met with over 1,000 constituents and stakeholders, and we asked them, and then we listened. We tried to spend as little time talking, as much time listening as possible, and here's some of the things that they told us. First, they wanted this agency, our agency, to be a stronger advocate for the economy and for business than we have been in the past. They wanted to see us be more than just an administrator of programs, but in fact a voice and a champion for the economy at the table, because that voice often isn't there or isn't loud enough. Number two, the communities and the businesses told us that they wanted us to focus increasingly as much, if not more, of our time and energy and resources on helping the existing Oregon companies that are here grow than we are on recruiting and marketing to out-of-state companies to pick up their roots and relocate to Oregon. A difficult proposition always, but one I'll get to in more detail later. They told us three.
Director Robbins, let me interrupt you. Thank you. You've honored us by being here, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your visit in the United States.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
The third thing they told us was that they wanted us to invest more thoughtfully and strategically into nurturing Oregon entrepreneurs to take their ideas from concept into reality. So the small business entrepreneurship and innovation space has become an increasing priority, as you'll see in the coming coming slides and in the coming days, certainly. And fourth, they want this agency, and I think this is critical, to recognize the difference between what our role should be. What is the state's role in different parts of the state? Because it's not always the same role. How we show up to play in Portland Metro and how we show up to play in Bend and Medford is different than how we show up to play in Pendleton or Ontario or Baker, Astoria, or Lincoln City for that matter. And we have to develop a state economic development strategy and set of programs in our agency that flex and adapt accordingly based on what it is the value proposition is of our state agency going forward. And you'll see that here as well in the coming days. So all of that, those findings, the data, the best practices that we know works as economic development professionals has all been brought together in a simple framework called Grow Our Own, which guides everything that this agency is doing going forward. And everything that you'll see in this budget going forward is being viewed through the prism of growing our own. And the idea is very, very simple, although the work of doing it is challenging, and you got to do it every day to win this game, which is that the companies that are here today are the ones that are going to give you the job growth in the future. And the best way to recruit and attract companies to the state is to start by first taking care of the ones that we've already got. Most recruitments and attractions will come to a state because the CEO community and their supply chains and their workforce will tell them it's a competitive place to do business, not because a director of a state agency or a local business development officer will tell them that. We're incentivized to tell them that. So what we want to do as an agency is make sure that the CEOs and the decision makers who are here on the ground in the state of Oregon investing in growing jobs have such a favorable view and impression of economic development in this state that when future prospects come to the state, that prospect will hear from the CEO community, this is a competitive place to do business, I can get the labor that I need, I can partner with the state, I have a supply chain infrastructure I can use, and I can move product out of this state around the world globally. That's really the vision of what our own is, and it's done through these three simple pieces: expanding what we've got, starting up new ones, and then when we do those too well, working to attract and recruit companies. That just doesn't sound good either. So this is based on data. And this is one of the things in agency that I'm pushing. Everything we do has to be data driven. So if you look at the data, 70% of the typical job growth that occurs in the average American community starts from the companies that we already have in that community. So while the headline sort of article, if you will be for the company that was recruited here with the ribbon cutting, the reality is that, in fact, that constitutes the minority of job growth in the typical American community. And 70% is a fairly conservative number. There are some estimates, Brookings Institution out of Washington, D.C., which puts this number closer to 97% and 98%. But let's just say 3 out of 4, if you will, jobs that are created in the typical community are coming from the existing companies. And I was with Mark Reeser from Reeser's Fine Foods just last week, where we made an investment in their expansion, 350 jobs, $60 million expansion. They looked at multiple states for that expansion, and Oregon showed up, won the business, and helped keep those 350 jobs here. The reality is, if we had spent the same amount of time, energy, and money chasing 350 jobs from Louisiana, we would be coming home to you with nothing. to show for it. Okay, maybe something. Now, I say all this, and I don't mean to suggest that we're not prioritizing recruitment. We still do recruitment. We will still do recruitment and attraction. It is an important part, but it is a complementary tactic, not a leading tactic for our organization's priorities and investments going forward. Again, something I hope you see in the budget presentation in the next couple days. To drill that just a step further now, going one layer down in terms of this agency, grow our own sounds good, simple words. What does it really mean in terms of tactical avenues of investment? This is the key word for the budget that I'd like you to be thinking about. It's really about business retention and expansion. That's the first key component to this. Building statewide relationships with decision makers and firms through proactive biz dev efforts. Two, investing in the state's startup scene of entrepreneurs who are building scalable companies to take their ideas from concept to reality. That's the second piece. The third, getting capital to small Oregon businesses. Growth capital, bridge capital. Fourth, and this speaks to our infrastructure work, enabling communities to construct the basic bread and butter infrastructure that they need to compete in the economy in the first place, water, wastewater, you name it. Lots of the work we do in the Infrastructure Finance Authority. Fifth, connecting small and medium-sized businesses to global trade opportunities and global exports. Some of our most impressive work in one of the smallest programs we have is actually connecting Oregon small businesses with overseas trade opportunities where the ROI is significant, where we blew the cover off the ball, if you will, on our key performance metric this past year by a magnitude of 500%. Incredible support of small businesses. The last, of course, is developing timely and actionable market research and data. When I said earlier that it's not just what we do, but how we do that's really important, what I mean by that in data-driven is that we have to adapt as an agency in ways that I would offer other agencies don't necessarily have to adapt as quickly to. Our customers, our business, and they're moving an increasingly fast, connected economy, capital, talent, opportunities. We have to be able to move at that speed. And if you think back to from 2015 today to 2013, just 2 years ago, the economic scenario we found ourselves in and the economic scenario we find ourselves in now is very different. So we as an agency have to constantly evolve our business plan in a way that allows us to be flexible within the constraints of the budget that we've been given. And the way to do that is to make sure that we have some of the best data analytics anywhere of any of the 49 other states we're competing with as it relates to business development.
Mr. Robbins, before you leave this slide, could you please comment on access to capital? Because I think that there is a wide misunderstanding about what that means. Does it mean you're walking around with a large sack of money, just handing it out, picking winners and losers? What all is in that portfolio that would help inform Oregonians who may be listening to this in another venue or our new committee members? When you say that, what do you mean?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. So access to capital is the work that we do in providing, say, loans or loan guarantees, letters of credit to entities or small businesses, traded sector businesses in the state, many of whom are doing manufacturing, most of whom are all small businesses in this state, in order to access new equipment purchases, in order to provide operating capital for a set period of time, in order to be a last gap funder in a capital stack with a business who's securing private loans, but the state's providing a letter of credit or loan guarantee for the backstop on critical businesses and communities who are traded sector, who employ traded sector Oregonians.
Thank you. And if I could ask you to nuance that just slightly more in terms of a company that is interested in availing themselves of any of the tools in your portfolio, what is the progression to come to you? What are the minimum qualifications? You mentioned one of them, traded sector. But what are the minimum qualifications to be considered? It's not just Betsy wakes up one day and says, I have a great idea. I think I'll go down to Salem and get Mr. Robbins to give me some money. Explain a little bit about how concepts are developed and brought to a sort of fullness that can be then analyzed by your back room, for lack of a better way to describe it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we employ the similar, if not the same, underwriting standards as any other traditional private lending institution. We have to have the company financials. We have business finance officers located throughout the state in order to vet, find, source those opportunities. Many of the folks we have in our shop have extensive, long track records in business finance and banking. And actually, I believe it's in 2 days or 1 day, John Saris, our head of the business finance unit, will actually be here. And of course, to more specifically answer the question on what is needed, depends on program by program of how you scale it up. But just to say, nobody gets to just walk in and say, I want money. They have to go through a very similar underwriting process they'd have to go through if they walked into their local bank in order to access those funds. And in many times, we actually partner directly with the banks. It's not us competing with the banks, it's us not taking their place. It's providing a portion of the capital in order to make sure that the private sector underwriting that is being done is complementary to the underwriting that we are doing.
Thank you. I think that's very helpful. Now I've taken you from your presentation, so pick up wherever I interrupted you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the earlier point of how we do our work, and I won't go into this in exhaustive detail, but as a director of any enterprise, whether it be a profit or for-profit, one of the things I think is really important is that we clearly and transparently lay out the things that are important to us and how we manage the enterprise, and that's how we view this. We're managing an enterprise. Besides saying that things needed to emphasize the grow-our-own approach, one of the other things we emphasized very, very clearly up front is that things have to have a very clear return on investment. We need to be able to quantify the ROI on the investments that we make. Now, to be clear as a caveat, not everything we do can have a quantifiable return on investment. For example, when we retrofit schools and hospitals with our seismic rehabilitation program, it's hard to draw a dollar-for-dollar connection to the ROI of that, but I think it'd be hard to argue that doing so doesn't support that community's basic bread and butter ability to compete on its infrastructure. But where we can measure return on investment, we do. And so increasingly inside our agency, we're looking at ways to be able to come back to you as a body and say, this is a 5-to-1 ROI. This is a 10-to-1 ROI. And we are measuring that internally as division directors and as an agency director to be able to make sure that everything we're doing has at least a 1-to-1 ROI. If it doesn't have a 1-to-1 ROI, we need to be able to come back to you, say that it doesn't, and either explain why it doesn't work, or maybe the answer is this program isn't structured correctly and we need to make modifications to it. So increasingly over time, you'll see that from us going forward, and we're already doing it in many of our programs today. I won't spend a lot of time on the organizational chart, but suffice it to say that increasingly inside our agency, we have 135 full-time professionals, 135 people competing for the state of Oregon and the global economy. The structure is less important other than to say that over time, we're making sure that the structure of our agency matches and reflects the priorities we've set up in the Grow Our Own framework, to make sure that each of these has the appropriate amount of staffing and standing in order to be able to deliver on what we say to you is important going forward. And we're in the process of that evolution right now in this biennium, and we'll continue through the next biennium. We've also been asked to talk just a touch about efficiency projects, and I also won't spend an inordinate amount of time here on this slide delving too deeply, but I do want to highlight the outstanding, actually I would call it the exceptional work of the Infrastructure Finance Authority's lean manufacturing process as an example of what can be done with efficiency projects. The IFA brought in essentially the lean process to take a fresh look at everything it does in processing the funds that we distribute to small communities for their infrastructure projects like water, wastewater, and so forth. when Assistant Director Lynn Chesler took the Infrastructure Finance Authority over, the average lead time from the day an application was submitted to the day a dollar went out the door was 39 weeks. 39 weeks. After Lean, the IFA's average time, its goal time is 19 weeks. They shoot for 12 weeks. It's a significant investment that, it's a significant increase in the speed at which our agency was able to deliver to our customers on the ground. And I think it's worth noting that these efficiency projects can have outsized impact when they're done right. And we're continuing to do it. In fact, based on that experience and that result inside the agency, we're applying the same lean process assessment and analysis to other divisions inside our agency, like the business finance group, back to the earlier point, in order to make sure that the customers we're dealing with are getting an exceptionally rapid turnaround. If the answer is no, the answer is no. But if the answer is yes, we continue to move from point A to point B in rapid succession without negating any underwriting standards.
Director Robbins, I'm going to interrupt the flow of your presentation again, and I don't necessarily want an answer but right now, but for when this part of the presentation comes, for somebody to think about it. I am very gratified, having sat through this budget now for a number of years, to hear your heavy emphasis on the ROI. And I am wondering to what degree you are holding those pass-through grantees to the same standard of rigor that you are imposing on the agency and your subsets within the agency. I'm thinking about the Oregon Inc. And again, I sit on their audit committee, but I think that it would be valuable to talk a little bit about that. And again, at an appropriate point in your presentation, I just would like to flag it.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. This is probably the most defining piece of our management strategy, is this ROI emphasis, or a multiplier emphasis, depending on how you want to call it. I'll give you an example. In the Innovation and Entrepreneurship Division, a new division we've created inside the agency, which will house activities like the Oregon Innovation Council, we are moving towards a system where the investments that we make, for example, in that group, like Oregon Inc., have been competitive in nature. We're going to be doing that across all of our innovation ecosystem support investments that we make, the grants and other things that we've given to organizations that support the entrepreneurial ecosystem. We want to make that a competitive process going forward. And then when we award those grants, those investments to those various organizations and institutions, our agreements with them will be entirely about following through on not just the process metrics of what they're delivering on, but also measuring the overall outcome of that work. And that would be the multiplier ROI. And it depends, investment by investment, but we're moving forward on that across all of our programs agency-wide, division by division. And currently, that actually happens in a number of areas, but it doesn't happen universally, and I'd like to see it happen universally across all of them.
Well, and the ability to keep it competitive. It has been all too often my observation that programs get embedded and it becomes an entitlement rather than a nimble, competitive, urgent process. And that has concerned me a little bit when we talked about reconfiguring the ETIC, and I've called it ETIC for so long I can't even remember what the acronym is. It's an engineering metric. But it pretty soon became an embedded entitlement in my observation rather than having this nimble performance ethic. So,
Madam Chair, thank you.
Please continue.
We're working with you on that going forward. So the key performance metrics, we have 10 key performance metrics as an agency. And I will tell you that in addition to what's legislatively prescribed by our KPMs, we're instituting at the management level and for our commission a whole other subset of additional metrics that we want to measure and perform on going forward. But for the purposes here today, I will tell you the metrics and the ROI, there should be a theme emerging here about transparency, accountability, and measurement of our work. Like any business, you have to be able to adjust ebb and flow, like I mentioned before, and being able to monitor these KPMs along with any of the other metrics we have is our ability to change our business plan on a dime if things are working or not working accordingly. I am pleased to report that through the end of fiscal year 2014, our agency has surpassed, of the 10 KPMs, we've surpassed the metric, target metric, in 6 of the 10 areas. In the 4 that we didn't, we've come exceptionally close in almost every single case. So, for example, exports, as I mentioned before, as you'll see on KPM 4 on this first slide, the target was at $18 million of export sales reported from the work that our agency did. We overperformed by a multiplier of 5x, and the number there is close to $90 million of reported export sales from Oregon small businesses. So we've overperformed in some of these cases. If you look at, for example, KPM 10, the customer satisfaction rating, our target goal was 90% overall customer satisfaction. We turned in an 89% overall customer satisfaction. So, like I said, in some areas of the 6 of 10, we've overperformed. In the 4 of the 10 that we didn't hit the metric, we've come very close in almost every single case. There is a vast array of metrics to choose from. I know that's actually a really important part of this process that I look forward to talking with you folks as well. I was trying to gauge the investments, the effectiveness of our investments, and actually making sure that the measures that we're using at the management level inside the enterprise as often as possible closely match the metrics that we're using at the legislative level to make sure there's consistent alignment in driving the outcomes that we're targeting with the budget that we have. So, I won't walk you through the history of the agency here, but I do want to take a moment to, as we set up the next roughly 3.5 days now, to give credit to the staff at this agency who are out there swinging the bat on the state's behalf every day to further business development. For an agency our size, our budget, our programs, diversity is not something that is inconsequential. We run an incredibly complex gamut of programs on different topic areas, whether it's business development, global trade, innovation and entrepreneurship and startups, access to capital and business finance, tax credit programs, arts, culture, infrastructure. We have a big portfolio at this agency. And we're really proud of the work we've done in the last 9 months. We know we've got a lot more work to do going forward, and we look forward to working with you in the days to come and in the months to come during this session to get the budget put together.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions for Director Robbins? Thank you. Senator Monroe.
We talk a lot about that we're not one state, we're two states. There's a big differences between the rural parts of our state and the urban parts of our state, that most of the jobs and most of the innovation is happening in Washington County and basically in the urban area, whereas many of the rural areas are suffering. And yet I know as chair of the Ed Sub that students that are raised east of the Cascades are less than half as likely to go to college as those that grow up west of the Cascades. And this is a fact, and it's happening at the same time that we are basically defunding higher education and to a large degree reducing funding for our community colleges. That's where economic development takes place. Now, I've fought real hard to keep the institutions of higher learning that exist east of the mountains there in Bend, in LeGrand, and so on, but because we know that students, if they're going to go to college, would rather go to college close to home. But I just wondered if you had any comments. It seems to me that you're doing all these good things, and yet the fact that we're disinvesting in higher education is running counter, especially in the rural areas, especially east of the mountains, is running counter to your efforts. Because one of the things you didn't talk much about, but we all know is important, is an educated workforce, trained people, that if an employer is moving into our state, he's going to want to see, you know, what kind of trained people is he going to have available to him? So this is really troubling me, and it seems to me that we're pushing and pulling. You know, we're fighting really hard to create more jobs, and yet because of the way we're not investing in higher education, and the fact that rural students are much less likely to go to college, is making it difficult and running counter to that. I think I just gave a speech, Madam Coulter. Sorry about that.
You did, and we're going to thank your speech for the record and move to Amanda. Ms. Patel, please.
Okay. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Amanda Beidle, Chief Financial Officer at Business Oregon. I'm going to provide you an overview of Business Oregon's 2015-17 governor's budget. We're going to kick off the overview by looking at some of our key policy option packages. And as I'm sure you've heard before and Mr. Bender mentioned, our policy option packages, or POPs, as I'll call them later, are either requests to continue funding for a program that was funded one time in the prior biennium, an increase for funding to an existing program, or funding to establish a new program. And also, please note that this is going to be, we're going to cover a lot of material because it's the entire agency budget, and you'll get to hear more about these packages and the programs they support in the upcoming days. So you might want to hear more about it, and I'm going to touch on it, and you'll get to have that opportunity later on.
Thank you.
We have four packages that really support rural economy. The first is a $5 million lottery request to establish the Natural Resource Transformative Technology Grant Program. This program will make grants available to commercialize transformative natural resource technologies, we actually introduced legislation, House Bill 2434, that establishes this program. We have a $10 million lottery bond request to establish the Oregon Infrastructure Opportunity Program. This is a program that provides loans and forgivable loans for rural infrastructure projects. And again, we introduced legislation, House Bill 2434, to establish this program. The governor's budget included a $15 million lottery bond request to establish the Working Forests and Farms Finance Initiative. $10 million of this would be used to create a revolving loan fund that would allow working forests and farms to access credit, and the remaining $5 million would establish a loan guarantee program so that they would have access to private capital. And finally, we have a $28 million lottery bond request to support regional infrastructure. $14 million of that would recapitalize our Special Public Works Fund for ongoing local infrastructure needs. $7 million is dedicated to fund levy, inspection, repair, certification, and accreditation. And the remaining $7 million would establish industrial lands, infrastructure, patient capital financing. Okay. Move on to our POPs around innovation. The department requested $29.35 million in lottery funds for the Oregon Innovation Council's 2015 Innovation Plan. And this is one of those programs that is funded on a one-time basis, so we ask for it every biennium. We have a small $84,000 lottery fund request to increase our existing half-time position that staffs the Oregon Growth Board to full-time to really better integrate the board's investment activities into the department's innovation strategy. And finally, we have a $3.2 million lottery fund request for two innovation initiatives that were funded one time last biennium. The first is $1 million for the operations of the Regional Accelerator Innovation Network, also known as RAIN, and the remaining $2.2 million would support the Oregon Metals Initiative and the Northwest Collaboratory for Sustainable Manufacturing.
I want to ask you a question. Going back to the manufacturing piece of it, I understand that there may be bits of that initiative both in your agency as well as in education. And perhaps I'm pandering to the education sub here, but I don't know. He says, why not? I don't know whether or not it would be efficacious to put those all in one place. And I just ask that rhetorically, and I will work with the chair to visit about that at a later time, rather than having them bifurcated in two different places.
Yeah. Madam Co-Chair, I have heard the same thing, that there is a piece of funding in the Higher Education Coordinating Committee and then the piece of funding in ours. So,
thank you.
The department requested a little over $200,000 in lottery funds in support of global trade to add a foreign direct investment officer that would really help identify international investment opportunities in Oregon. We have two POPs that we requested in support of infrastructure. The first is a $7 million lottery bond request to recapitalize our Brownfields Redevelopment Fund. And the second is a $100 million general obligation bond request for the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program. $30 million of that $100 million would be dedicated to school rehab, and the remaining $30 million would be for emergency service buildings.
70.
Oh, what did I say first?
30 to 30.
Oh, 70, excuse me. $70 million for schools.
Thank you. And I, just because you did that the way you did, I lost you slightly. You ended up with this program largely because it had struggled in other places.
Mm-hmm.
This is, in my opinion, somewhat outside of your wheelhouse, and I'm just trying to figure out how robust is the plan, and you don't have to answer this now, but I would be very interested in seeing how robust the plan is in terms of the prioritization. I think every community, every one of us sitting at this panel could say, we have a crisis based on fill in the blank. And I'm just trying to figure out how the agency will go about bringing some level of coherence to who goes first and for how much. And how do you avoid doing little tiny pieces that don't really fix anything, trying to stretch the money further, when we have brick buildings in eastern Oregon, we've got tsunami inundation, we've got all kinds of things that could be subject to that seismic rehab. And having a coherent plan for the distribution of the money, I think, would be exceedingly helpful.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Lynn Schessler testifies tomorrow or Wednesday, both days.
Good.
I think we'd go deep there, but I would concur with you that this is not entirely a perfect fit for our agency's general mission statement.
Thank you. Please continue.
All right. And we have a $1.5 million lottery fund increase our existing industry competitiveness fund. This would provide increased funding for the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Program, an additional $750,000, $200,000 for continued funding of the Grow Oregon Program that was funded on a one-time basis the last two bienniums, and $500,000 for the Small Business Innovation Research and Small Business Technology Transfer Research Program.
Thank you.
The governor's budget also included the following three POPs: $1.2 million in lottery funds to continue funding for the Office of Multi-State Initiatives and to establish two regional coordinator positions as permanent, $200,000 lottery request to support the state's policy and implementation commitments under the PCC Energy and Climate Plan, and a $1.5 million lottery bond request to support the final phase of construction for the Lynn Benton Community College Alternative Fuels Lab. The department introduced four bills this session. We touched on the first two when we talked about POPs. House Bill 2434 establishes the Natural Resource Transformative Technology Grant Program, and House Bill 2435 establishes the Infrastructure Opportunity Program. The third, House Bill 2436, actually modifies our Special Public Works Fund statute to allow funding to levy project recipients. And the fourth, House Bill 2435, is a technical fix to our Industry Competitiveness Fund, and it would really clarify the type of assistance we provide with that fund. So here we have our 2015 governor's budget, our total budget of $649 million, broken out by the six funded divisions within our agency. And as you can see, infrastructure programs make up the majority of our agency budget, followed by the programs that support business retention, expansion, recruitment, access to capital, global trade. Unfortunately, debt service requirements make up the third largest chunk of our agency budget. And to provide a little background, debt service is the lottery and general fund that's appropriated to our agency every biennium to make the principal and interest payments on bonds that were issued in prior bienniums.
And would it be correct to say, and not always initiated by the agency? I want to be absolutely clear on this point. You have inherited debt from other places that got parked with you, and it has always been a point of consternation for me how the agency is penalized when we've had to do across-the-board cuts. the agency is penalized based on the amount of accumulated debt service that you have that came sometimes extracurricular to your core mission. Is that, you're nodding your head. I want it on the record you agree.
Absolutely correct. And we'll even touch on this more when we look at reduction options, because it becomes even more apparent how it penalizes the agency for having a lot of outstanding debt.
Thank you. Please continue.
So arts and culture, shared services is really the central operations of the agency, and film and video make up the remaining 5% of our budget. And I'm not going to say $649 million is a significant budget, but just to put it in a little bit of perspective, out of the state's total budget, that's 1%. And of our discretionary funding, lottery and general funding, is actually less than 1% of the state's total budget. Here we have the budget broken out by the sources of funds. So there's four budgeted fund types, and we have every one of them. Other funds make up 69% of our funding, followed by lottery funds, federal funds, and general fund. And where the source of lottery, federal, and general funding is pretty apparent, other funds can take many forms. And so on the next couple of slides, we've identified the major sources of our other funding. So of the 446 other funds, beginning fund balances in our revolving loan programs, and that's actually in the infrastructure programs and the business finance programs, make up just over $100 million of revenue that supports our other fund expenditures. Our second largest fund source is bond proceeds. And bond proceeds are actually categorized as other funds, even though the debt service on those is later going to be paid with lottery or general funds. So our budget includes exactly $207 million in bond funding. $100 million of that is the general obligation bond proceeds that we talked about for seismic. $77 million is lottery bond proceeds that is funding multiple programs. We talked about special public works, the infrastructure opportunity program, brownfields. There's also funding from lottery bonds going to regional solutions projects. And the last $30 million of bond proceeds is actually revenue bonds that are issued through our special public works and water fund programs, where the money is loaned out and loan repayments actually satisfy the debt service on those bonds.
Thank you, Co-Chair Gobert.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. A question that may seem odd, but you'll understand the context. In repaying any of these loans, can I use credit cards?
Co-Chair Gobert, we don't accept credit cards to repay loans. The only portion of our agency that actually accept credit cards is the cultural trust.
Thank you.
So no frequent flyer miles in repaying my sewer indebtedness.
No.
Thank you. Please continue, Ms. Whitehill.
Okay. Our third largest revenue source is actually the loan principal and interest repayments. We anticipate receiving approximately $103 million in loan principal repayments and interest earnings. Business Oregon actually administers the Safe Drinking Water Program, which is funded through an EPA federal grant. And Oregon Health Authority is actually the recipient of that grant, and then they transfer the proceeds to us. So we consider them other funds. We affectionately call them other as federal because they still have all the federal strings, but they're budgeted as other funds. The Oregon Cultural Trust receives approximately $8 million a biennium in donations. We have other revenues that consist of assessments to other agencies for the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business, the Percent for Art program. We also receive loan application and closing fees. The Arts Commission receives approximately a $500,000 private grant from the Ford Family Foundation every biennium. And finally, when we issue lottery bonds, a portion of those are reserved into what we call lottery debt service reserves. And the earnings off of those pay some of the portion of lottery debt service. So that's the remaining $400,000. The source of lottery funds is pretty apparent, the sale of lottery tickets and video lottery. But of our $144 million total lottery funds, it's important to note that 38% of the funding is dedicated to debt service. And so the remaining 62% is used for operations, and then mainly our business programs and the Office of Film and Video. Business Oregon currently administers 5 federal grants in addition to the Safe Drinking Water one. Brownfields receives an EPA grant they apply for annually. The most recent grant was $500,000 for fiscal year 2014. In 2011, the department applied for and received a $16 million grant from U.S. Treasury for the State Small Business Credit Initiative. This capitalized three of our business finance programs. The department recently applied for and received a $300,000 grant from the State Small Business Administration for the State Trade and Export Promotion Grant. The match for that grant is provided through our Oregon Trade Promotion Program. The Infrastructure Division manages the Community Development Block Grant from HUD. And finally, the Arts Commission receives an annual grant from the National Endowment on the Arts, which is matched with their general funding. When you look at general fund, it's again important to note that of the $19 million total funding, $15 million is dedicated to debt service on the seismic program, and the remaining $4 million is for operations and grants out of the Arts Commission. So I think one of the things you'll take away from covering that very briefly is that we have a diverse set of programs, and they're funded through multiple revenue sources. And so going through the presentation, we've included a slide similar to the one that you see right in front of you that breaks out the budget here in total and going forward by program, by the source of funding. So that means when you see green, think lottery, and when you see other, or when you see blue, think other, and what the source of those other funds are. So our 2015 budget is a 38% increase over our existing 13-15 legislatively approved budget. And we'll talk about the major drivers of that budget growth. So of a total growth of $171 million, we have listed some of the contributors. Our request for the seismic program has increased $70 million, from $30 million in the current biennium to $100 million in the 15-17 biennium. The request for the Special Public Works Fund has increased $16 million, was $12 million in 13-15 and $28 million request in 15-17. Part of the increase in that request is for the additional funding for patient capital and the levy funding. Working Forests and Farms is a new $15 million program. The request for the Oregon Innovation Council has increased $10 million. The Infrastructure Opportunity Program is a new $10 million program. And Brown's Field program did not have any capitalization in the prior biennium. In fact, the last recapitalization of that fund was in the 05-07 biennium, and current funds are almost nearly committed, 100% committed. That growth also includes nine new positions in the department. The governor's budget included three planner positions that will coordinate with regional solutions teams and enhance community development in Oregon. The Arts Commission requested the addition of two new public art coordinators to administer the increasing number of public art projects. Currently, there are 16 projects active, with another 13 ready to begin immediately. The Arts Commission currently has one staff person for this program, and the percent for art revenue stream would actually cover the cost of these two new positions. The earnings on the $28 million bond sale for the Special Public Works Fund would support another regional coordinator in the Infrastructure Division. The department would then have one coordinator in each of the 11 regional solutions areas. We talked about the Foreign Direct Investment Officer earlier under POPs, and the department requested the addition of a research analyst within the Research and Policy Division to provide quantitative data analysis that would really allow the department to evaluate programs, provide economic policy recommendations, identify business development prospects, and make data-driven decisions. And finally, the addition of two new loan programs would require another loan specialist to administer those programs. All right. So the last item we're going to cover in the budget overview is reduction options. So as I'm sure you're aware, all agencies are required by statute to calculate 10% reduction options by fund type. And as you saw in our chart earlier, and as we talked about a little bit, the department carries a lot of debt for the state of Oregon. And debt service is currently required to be included in that 10% calculation, but obviously you can't reduce the amount you're paying your bondholders. So we have to take the 10% calculation on debt service out of our operations and programs. And general fund is a perfect example of this. When you look at the 5 and 10% reduction options to general fund, which is going to affect the Arts Commission because they're the only general funded program, it's going to reduce grants. But if you take the reduction on general fund debt service, it's an additional 22% reduction to the Arts Commission funding, which is significant. Lottery fund reductions affect staff, operations, and programs in the business division and agency operations, as well as the Office of Film and Video. A 5% reduction eliminates 3 positions in the business division. It also reduces grants provided through our business programs. A 10% reduction puts the funding for the Japan representative office at risk and also eliminates additional grants out of the business programs. If you take into consideration debt service, it's an additional 12% reduction to operations and programs, which is the equivalent of 8 positions and $2 million in grants and forgivable loans that we provide. In other funds, a 5% reduction option eliminates 1 position in the infrastructure division. It reduces grants provided out of the port planning and marketing, regional solutions, and seismic programs. A 10% reduction eliminates 4 positions, 1 in the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business, 1 in the Infrastructure Division, and 2 positions in Shared Services. It also reduces grants provided through the Infrastructure and Arts Divisions. And finally, our reduction in federal funds really just reduces the department's ability to receive and expend federal grants. A majority of our federal funding is through the Community Development Block Grant and Brownfield programs, which mainly support rural Oregon. So reduction in these programs disproportionately affects rural Oregon. And with that, we're at the end of the budget. So
thank you very much. Okay. Colleagues, any questions from respect to Chair Gromberg?
If we could go back to slides, please.
Yeah.
There we go. The certification specialist dealing with minority, women-owned, and emerging small business, is that a reflection of increased efficiencies or decreased applications?
Co-Chair Gromberg, that would be a result of a decrease. Like if we had to take reduction options in other funds, we'd have to assess agencies a lesser amount. We wouldn't be able to pay for that position.
Let's just stop here for a moment of explanation. The agencies are required to present reduction options should there be some reason that we needed to reduce budgets. And so this is a prioritization of what they would cut if they were forced to cut. And in the past, it's always like we sacrifice the high school baseball team in order to get the budget. I think these are probably pretty realistic, and I applaud you for a realistic assessment of what would have to go if the agency was pressed into heavy reductions. Did I say that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any other questions? As we ask Ms. Julian to come up, Ms. Beitel, I just want to tell you, I've heard this budget for a decade now. I have never heard it presented as cogently, as efficiently, and as well as you just did the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Ms. Julian, would you, I believe you're up now. Is that correct, Director Roberts?
Correct.
Or Robbins?
And while she comes up here, if you'll allow me, Madam Chair, to just quickly introduce Samantha. Samantha comes to us from the State of Utah Governor's Economic Development Office. She's the new Assistant Director of Business Development for the agency. And I think you've been on the job 96 days? 5, 6? Somewhere in that ballpark. So any hard questions, please direct them at me.
And if you spoke Serbian, I could greet you in Serbian. But leaving that aside, let's go ahead with your presentation. Welcome to Oregon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Co-Chair Gromberg, committee members. For the record, my name is Samantha Julian. I'm the Assistant Director for Business Development for Business Oregon. Good afternoon. The Business Development Division, as you can see, has a mission that focuses in 3 areas and is the outward-facing arm of the organization with teams that are in the regional areas as business development officers. We also have corporate recruitment officers, global trade and foreign direct investment, marketing, incentives, the Office of Minority, Women, and Small Business, as well as business finance. Today, I'm going to introduce the division through the lens of business expansion. On the front end, the line of our work is done in the regions with our business development officers, or BDOs. Through them is a conduit to offer our programs and services to all areas in Oregon. Then we'll move on to our business finance and global trade teams. Tomorrow you'll hear more about their work. Local business retention and expansion, of course, drives and helps produce corporate recruitment opportunities. Sean already mentioned the fact that getting new companies to come to Oregon, of course, is taking care of the ones that are already here. There's no better spokesperson for Oregon than a CEO who's already grown his business successfully right here at home. This next slide shows a map of where our business development officers are located. And I've begun to travel the state, meeting the business development officers as well as our partners. We have 9 business development officers, and our regions align with the regional solutions teams. I've had the opportunity to travel the northern coast and southern coast, as well as mid and Willamette valleys. And I'll be spending my spring and summer in eastern Oregon. My approach to business development is a proactive one. I expect the business development officers to hold relationships with local partners as well as the top employers in their areas.
Let me just stop and ask you a question.
Yes.
Here. In looking at this map and knowing the coast, the Lincoln County, Tillamook County, as well as I do, and knowing where all the dead areas of cell phone service are, and anticipating that Senator Hansel could fill in where all the dead spots are in the orange area, I'm just curious, does the current structure lend itself to the kind of nimbleness and urgency and responsiveness that the director outlined during his presentation? I'm trying to figure out how, in looking at the orange area, for example, that has 7 counties, maintaining relationships with all 7 county commissioners, all of the local economic development people, huge distances, and while folks may think that the coast, for example, represents a homogeneous attitude towards issues, I'm here to tell you, and I think Representative Gomberg would bear out, that isn't the case. Are you, in your early introduction to this structure, finding this adequate to the agency's needs?
Chair Johnson, I'll be careful when I answer this question, as I am the newbie on the team. I would say 2 things to this factor. One is I came from a state that all economic development is done on a central basis. There are no teams in the regions. So to me, this is a vast improvement in economic development and having the voice of those regions. But I would say it is really tough. We really could use more of a team. We do a very good job at what we do. We hold relationships at top value. But the regional solutions folks have 11. We have 9. So it just makes it a little bit tougher, and we would offer that. Obviously, more staff would be more successful in holding relationships, keeping our finger on the pulse of industry trends, hearing of problems before they become major issues, and, of course, being responsive to challenges.
One other question. Again, I don't expect an answer necessarily right now, but the requirement for coordination between the business development officers and the regional solution folks, what mechanism do you have in place to make sure that the right and the left hand are speaking to each other or are integrated in a way that it's not redundant or duplicative or, frankly, contradictory?
Madam Chair, if you mind, I'll answer that question on semantics.
Very, very diplomatic, Mr. Director.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In fact, when we came on board this past summer, that was a question that we asked, which is how do you define the roles appropriately of all these folks in the field? And within coordination and partnership with the Regional Solutions, we actually have developed a role description on paper that defines what is the job of Regional Solutions Coordinator, and what is the job of a Business Oregon Business Development Officer, as well as an Infrastructure Finance Authority Officer, in order to essentially create a role description that makes sure that the left and the right hand knows exactly who's doing what in what region. Fundamentally, the Regional Solutions' primary job and mission is to coordinate multi-agency responses to opportunities on the ground. And fundamentally, our business development officers' primary functions are to create relationships with local businesses and bring those issues to a regional solutions context when we alone can't solve it. Now, there's always parts that break down and don't exactly hit the mark every single time, but I think the folks in the field are increasingly getting more comfortable, and partly because leadership at the agency and the governor's office is working to define exactly the parameters of what the role description should actually look like. And frankly, we're learning, I think, as we do it as well.
Thank you very much. It would be very helpful if you could get those role descriptions to the professional staff.
We will. Thank you.
Please continue, Ms. Julian. I apologize for interrupting you so many times.
Thank you, Chair. So today I'm going to talk about some of the tools and resources that we deploy and use for business expansion. I'm going to hone on three of them particularly because I feel like they are very important in our toolkit as strategic and provide opportunities to bring high wage or keep high wage jobs here in Oregon. These three are expansion funding programs. While we have traditional finance programs at our agency that help with access to capital as well as assisting in export services, we also have strategic tools designed to be competitive in the global economy, keeping companies and their investments right here at home. There are the Strategic Reserve Fund, the Business Expansion Program, and the Industry Competitiveness Fund. The first one is the Strategic Reserve Fund, probably one you've heard more about. It's generally a forgivable loan program that is a flexible tool focused on job creation and retention, expansion, as well as corporate recruitment projects. Projects typically have multiple funding sources to put a package together. The SRF is usually the deal closer coming in as the last money. With this program, we administer and make recommendation for the governor's consideration for approval. However, how these projects get founded and funded is through our business development officers in the field who have their finger on the pulse of what's going on, doing outreach to the field to find out what companies need our help.
Colleagues, I might just add that for Representative Gomberg and me, we ended up having a company in our district be the beneficiary of a strategic reserve investment under Governor Kulongowski's tenure as governor. And I think I can say without fear of contradiction that that investment saved that company, mm-hmm. saved those jobs, and the multiplier effect of the company. This is a company that produces oyster larvae for sale all over the world. And I think that if the CEO were here, he would say that that investment saved the company. It was a partnership with OSU, so you got double bang for the buck. But I just want to say for those people that are listening, this program works, and I think the measurable results are all over the state. Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Chair. I think this slide will answer some of the questions maybe you've been alluding to earlier in regard to results. For FY14, you'll notice that there were 2,884 jobs projected to be created through retention and expansion. But most importantly, I think you'll notice the ROI of the $4.7 million that was invested, or what we call awarded, leveraged $251 million in private dollars for projects in Oregon. This program is especially important in rural Oregon to take advantage of opportunities. Of the 18 awards, you can see 13 were in regional areas and 5 were in urban counties. Of this, expansion and retention takes up most of the projects at 87%, and corporate recruitment projects of new companies to Oregon takes up 13%. The largest business industry represented in this particular fund, which again is one of our more important strategic funds, is 64% in advanced manufacturing and 32% in wood and forest products. With our limited funds, we like our BDOs in the field to identify which companies make the most sense for that region, meaning they have to already have a competitive advantage, or this fund has to help them create a new competitive advantage. This is the main component of Grow Our Own strategy. In regard to funding and results, you'll see that this program is largely funded through lottery dollars with only a small amount coming from other. Again, other meaning loan repayments in this case. I'm going to highlight some successful projects that are pretty exciting for us. Fry Foods, I think everyone has heard that one in the media. That was 330 jobs in expansion from Idaho. Swanson Group, with our rapid response, was able to help rebuild, getting 190 employees back to work after a devastating fire in the mill last year. And Rocky Mountain Pipe, for 15 jobs, was exciting because they added a brand new innovative line to their products. The second program is the Business Expansion Program, which is a sister program to the SRF and actually funded through the SRF as a forgivable loan program. This is newer. The legislature created and approved this, and it's funded through the SRF to fill a gap that was there before in regard to having the opportunity to fund high-wage jobs in high-growth industries. So the specific standards for this one set by the legislature is 50 or more jobs, and each job must pay at least 150% of the county or state wage, whichever is less. And they must retain those jobs for at least 2-year period.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you remind me, Ms. Julian, what the status is of that? As I recall, it was the 2011 session, there's about $4 million or so. Did that all get spent? And where is it in the POPs and all those? You may have already said this, but I missed it.
I'll be careful, Ann. Also.
You want me to?
The SR, Madam Chair, Representative Reed, the BEP program is actually, like she said, a sister companion program to the SRF. So funding for BEP comes from SRF, and it's a one-time transfer from SRF into the BEP.
So
there's not a separate line item.
Follow-up.
Madam Chair, thank you. Am I remembering right? It was about $4 million in 2011, and then we're down to zero?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
So an example of this question is Garmin. We've all heard that in the media recently. These rigid high standards actually made a difference for this project because they were able to expand, and we made a compelling reason for them to do so, to bring those high-wage jobs to Oregon. So Garmin had the opportunity to choose between Chandler, Arizona, and Salem, Oregon, and the BEP. We won the project, made the difference. Last week, I had the opportunity to go to the ribbon cutting at the Salem Airport. And I can tell you that there was a true but-for situation here, that they needed the BEP and the state funding to choose Oregon. The third and final program is the Industry Competitiveness Fund, which makes investments that impact entire industries to make Oregon more competitive. It provides seed funding to match and leverage federal and private opportunities. As you can see in this slide, we leveraged $4 million in private and $2.3 in federal funds with our investment of $1.4 for the fiscal year of 2014. There's some great examples here. It was hard to narrow it down, as there's many things that we touch. But in export assistance, we're able to help small and medium businesses reach new markets. You'll hear much more about that tomorrow. We also helped develop a key industry with the Western Juniper Alliance, by helping them create demand for their local Oregon product. And lean manufacturing process improvement through OMEP, or the Oregon Manufacturers Extension Partnership, assisted Oregon businesses, 112 of them, to operate more efficiently and improve their bottom line. This slide is representative of a whole biennium for the Industry Competitiveness Fund. You've heard about this already, but the 1.5 is already included in the 3.4. Thank you. This concludes the Business Development Division for today. Tomorrow, again, you'll be hearing from Business Finance and Global Trade.
Thank you very much, Ms. Julian. Colleagues, any questions of Ms. Julian? Thank you very much. Director Robbins, any concluding remarks?
Look forward to seeing you tomorrow, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Colleagues, before we adjourn, would you please join Representative Gomberg and me in mourning the loss of Mayor of Nehalem, Shirley Kalkoven. Mm-hmm. Mayor Kalkoven was an economic development and transportation leader in Tillamook County. She died unexpectedly earlier today. Mm-hmm. With that, we're adjourned. With that, we're adjourned.